You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. In June of 1968, a funeral was held at Arlington National Cemetery in Washington, D.C. for Senator Robert Kennedy, just 3 days after he was assassinated in California. Among the mourners at Kennedy's funeral that day was a young boy from Minnesota, and that moment still moves him today. The boy is Jack Oman, who by 19 would become a nationally syndicated editorial cartoonist and decades later earn a Pulitzer Prize for the Sacramento Bee. For almost a decade, Jack's cartoons at the Sac Bee evoked a wide range of thoughts and emotions from readers about politicians or the events shaping our lives. But earlier this month, the Sacramento Bee's parent company, McClatchy, abruptly let go of Jack, along with other Pulitzer Prize-winning editorial cartoonists. According to the Associated Press, McClatchy, which owns 30 U.S. newspapers, said it would no longer publish editorial cartoons. I sat down with Jack Oman as he closes a chapter with the Sac Bee and open up about his remarkable career and point of view that spans more than 40 years. Jack, thank you so much for making the trip here to the Insight Studio.
Great to see you.
You know, when taking in your career, there is a lot to talk about and to unpack. I think the best way to start is kind of like the origin story. Where did your interest and your passion for editorial cartoons, when did it begin?
Well, I have to say, I think I came to this naturally in the sense that I was born in 1960. My mother and father were actually named John and Jackie. They named me Jack, and they voted for Nixon. So, you know, I was born to be an ironist. So my father worked for the U.S. Forest Service, and we moved to Washington, D.C. in March of 1968. And so some of your listeners may remember March of 1968. And so I was exposed to some national events as a child. I went to Robert F. Kennedy's burial at Arlington. I saw President Johnson and Jackie Kennedy and Ethel Kennedy and the hearse pulled right in front of me. And I remember the hyper-illuminated American flag. I watched Washington burning after King was assassinated. And then the huge anti-war marches in D.C. when I was a kid. And so that really got me interested in public affairs and politics. And then Watergate happened, and then I was obsessed with Watergate, and I was the guy in class who followed Watergate instead of the Minnesota Twins. And then I was also the compulsive doodler who messed up all my social studies papers with little drawings of Nixon and Gerry Ford and people of that era. And so ultimately, I wound up going into politics, and I was an advance man for a congressional candidate in 1978. And worked as an advance man for Vice President Mondale at 17 when I was an intern at the Minnesota Democratic Farmer Labor Party office. And so then there was one of my friend's mothers was a dean at the University of Minnesota. And she said, oh, look, there's an opening for a political cartoonist at the Minnesota Daily. And so I applied for that and wound up getting it because they had 39 art students and me. And the trick question for everybody was, who is William F. Buckley? And so, of course, I watched Firing Line every week, and I read him, and I watched all this stuff and read all this stuff, and so I wound up getting the job. And then when I was in college, I got syndicated at age 19, and I was the youngest syndicated cartoonist in the United States. By the time I was 20, I was the second most widely read cartoonist in the United States in 392 newspapers and on the Columbus Dispatch. And my face hadn't cleared up yet.
Would someone call you at that time? I mean, that is impressive at just being a teenager, 19 years old. But did someone at that time call you an old soul? Because I think there's like a lot of wisdom that has to come into editorial cartoons and just editorials in general.
Well, I am now at 62.95. Sure. I mean, I was very composed. I was very unusually composed because I wanted to go into politics. And I was kind of the kid on the debate team and the captain of the quiz bowl team on TV. Yes, we came in third out of 32 teams in Minnesota. And, you know, wore the tie, you know, everybody knows that guy with the news anchor hair. And so, sure, I was like a little Walter Cronkite.
You clearly had an interest, obviously, in public affairs, in politics, being engaged with what's going on in the world and having a front row seat to it, especially during the 60s and the 70s. But that could have taken you along different trajectories. I mean, you dipped your toe into politics a little bit. You could have dipped your toe into like reporting, but you chose editorial cartoons and you really built that momentum over the decades. Where do you think editorial cartoons fit within journalism and within politics?
Well, I still think they're hugely important, and people actually read editorial cartoons and like editorial cartoons. It is a indigenous species to American journalism, and there are very few of us anyway. And so the role of the American editorial cartoon has been huge going back to the founding of the country and in France and in England in the 1700s. And so this is a 300-400-year tradition of caricature. I mean, Da Vinci was doing caricatures. He called them grotesques. And so people love grotesques. And so consequently, I think that it's still hugely valuable. And I would not have chosen any other career path. I mean, my original thinking was, well, if I can't become a U.S. senator from Minnesota, I'll become a political cartoonist. Like, it looked easy to me in 10th grade. And the fact is it's incredibly difficult to do properly. And so I thought, well, I wound up becoming a political cartoonist because I wasn't really seeing the House seat I could run for in some ways, you know?
What goes into your creative process? Because, you know, some of your cartoons can seem so simplistic, but there's a lot of nuance and thoughtfulness that goes behind it.
I use the word reductionist, not simplistic, right? It's distillation. And so that's the key. What people really don't understand about this job is it's not an art job, it's a writing job. And so one of my friends once said that editorial cartooning were editorial cartoons in haiku form. And so that's the way I see it, where you are trying to, I mean, I consider myself primarily a writer, actually, with a, you know, art talent as a side hustle. And so I do enjoy drawing and I'm, you know, good at what I do in that regard. But I also don't think about it as like, oh, I'm going to draw an elephant and a donkey today. I'm thinking about what's that little turn of phrase, that little three-word thing, you know, that gets you to the actual idea. That's the job.
With all of the arguably noise that goes on with politics and the constant continuous coverage, how do you narrow in on a topic or an issue when creating a cartoon?
Well, Senator Howard Baker once said, what did the president know and when did they know it? I'm always trying to judge what do the readers know and when do they know it. And so there's so many different things that I read every day. And, you know, back in the day when I started in 1978, you got the daily newspaper and, you know, maybe you read The Times and you listened to Walter Cronkite and Peter Jennings and that, you know, Huntley Brinkley. Sorry, that's old. And then that's how you got information. And now it's like you don't even know what you're reading. It's just online, you know, and that's part of the problem. But like if you're discerning, you know what you're reading. You know that you're reading The New Republic or The Atlantic or, whatever it is. So that's a major element of my preparation.
There's obviously a point of view with an editorial cartoon. But when thinking of the reader, do you ever take into account the opinions and the reaction that your work might elicit, or does that just become too much of a distraction in the creative process?
I don't think about it. I think about what I think about and whether I'm expressing myself articulately and properly. And what everybody else thinks is up to them. I don't cater to anybody. I do what I believe in.
You know, you mentioned that obviously the way that we consume news, it is constantly evolving. The only constant is change, especially, you know, in journalism and news. When people are scrolling, you know, like on a social media app or they're scrolling on their laptop or their desktop, how has that impacted editorial cartoons and the way that you reach people across many different mediums?
Well, I can tell you that my work led the newsroom in terms of page views, generally speaking. So there's a digital audience out there. But there's so many different ways to do it now. I mean, you have to sometimes, if you were thinking about, okay, I've got to do it on a phone, you know it's going to scroll. It's got to be a certain simplicity and a certain sequencing. And so that's important. I've also done videos, and videos really work well on the phones. And so I've adapted over decades.
In your time creating these cartoons, I mean, did you have to develop a tougher skin if someone didn't like it? Has anything ever stung a little bit when someone reacted to a cartoon?
You get over it really fast. And sure, the worst thing you could say to me was, I didn't draw well. I mean, that was, oh, you're not a very good illustrator. You know, that's like the artist part. But the rest of it, I don't have time to care, number one. Number two, I've certainly been in situations over the course of my career where I was very concerned about my safety, honestly, and even here. And in the Trump era, the people are really good now at threatening you online and just staying on this side of the line of, you know, legally actionable. And so, of course, I'm concerned.
On the flip side, Governor Jerry Brown was a popular subject, and his dog Sutter as well was a popular subject. Has anyone who's been the subject of your editorial cartoons, you know, built a rapport with you and reached out to you?
Of course. Politicians really like seeing themselves in cartoons, generally speaking. I was just up at Governor Brown's ranch as his guest and doing an interview with him, and he's absolutely delightful in person and completely different than what I had thought. I mean, I had met him a few times, and the first time I saw him was in 1978 as a 17-year-old at Hubert Humphrey's funeral with his father, Governor Pat Brown. And then I saw him in 1992 when he was running for president with Jacques Baghazi in the Park Blocks in Portland, Oregon, wearing the silk jacket and so on. And then coming out here, I've been drawing cartoons about Jerry Brown since I was 14 years old. And so to actually spend a couple hours with him was stunning to me. And he's very kind of funny uncle, funny, like dry, kind of jokey, that stunned me. I've never seen this from him before. And when I went up there, I did a video with him in an interview where I minored in classics and he majored in classics. And so we were doing Latin conjugations together.
I know it. He and his Latin.
Quid novi puer. That's what's up, kid. And then Governor Newsom, I have a delightful relationship, frankly. People probably don't know this, but he's one of the best impressionists I've ever run into.
Really?
Like, he's very good at doing Clinton and Schwarzenegger and people like that. And he's an absolute delight in person. And he's very charismatic in a way that people don't get until you get in the room with him. Well, they get it. But I mean, he's even more charismatic in person. And so, yes, I have policy differences with him, and I have policy differences with Governor Brown, and I've hip-checked them many, many times, but they know what the deal is. It's commentary. It's very important in this society to have free commentary and free opinion.
Yeah. And when it comes with this type of commentary, it, of course, can broach uncomfortable topics, difficult topics. It elicits a reaction that's important, rapport, debate, you know, for people to talk about it. But you also touch upon emotional and tragic moments as well. One of the cartoons that you created was the Challenger mission back in 1986. And the cartoon, you essentially took, you know, seven stars from the U.S. flag and used it as a silhouette for the Challenger space shuttle. And you not only did that, but you sold the cartoon and you donated those proceeds to the families of the seven crew members that were killed. Just taking it in as a reader, it's a very emotional piece of work. And I would imagine the process for you was emotional as well when thinking about it and creating it.
Well, having had a 43-year career, I think that's right, 45 actually, these national tragedies have come up, and these are not gag cartoons. You have to constantly shift gears as an editorial cartoonist to read the room, to meet the moment. And so I remember I was at a gas station in Portland, Oregon, and listening to the shuttle blow up on ABC radio. And I remember so clearly Vic Ratner saying, was that supposed to happen? And then I went into the Oregonian and did that cartoon, and I had a 1 o'clock deadline, and I had no idea. And one of my friends who was a copy came in and he said, something with the flag. And he's now a number 4 New York Times bestselling author, actually. And then the 9/11, same thing, where you're like, I remember sitting just absolutely aghast and in shock and trying to comfort my children and having to go to work and draw something on this before 1:30. And so I did the same thing, and raise money. I think I raised $30,000-$40,000 for the United Way fund for 9/11. So I've done cartoons about presidential assassination attempts. I was just thinking about the Reagan attempt. I mean, things like that. You've got to stay focused and relevant and tasteful. And you want to be able to have people look at that and say, this is the emotion that I'm feeling. And when you're doing just a ham and eggs political cartoon, you just lay in your opinion out there and take it or leave it, baby.
The humanity behind an editorial cartoon in those moments.
Well, I try to be human, you know.
Well, you do a pretty good job at it.
Well, thank you so far. But the notion that I can abdicate my responsibility as a commentator and check my opinions at the door, that ain't happening. I do what I feel every day. That is my genuine emotion and my genuine position.
Who taught you that? Was it your parents or other family members, a mentor when you were young?
No. My father was the Norwegian great Santini. He was a Bronze Star winning PhD. And I would say emotional expression in Minnesota, Norwegian, Swedish homes is not really A1.
Didn't emote well.
He didn't emote well. My mother was emotive in a different way. So I think I was raised in a family where, you know, feelings weren't expressed very often. And if they were, they were expressed loudly. And so I kind of came out of that as a super empath almost. And everybody who knows me is like, you know, Jack reaches out, Jack cares about me, Jack likes me, and people like me, you know, and you would look at me and you think, well, this guy works at the weed shop, you know, or the fly shop, you know, I mean, I got 21 inch long white hair, you know, but I care about people. And that's why I was attracted to politics, is I loved meeting people and I loved registering voters and I loved telling people about my candidates. And I love public speaking, and obviously I can run my mouth occasionally. And so, I mean, it's important for me to be able to convey my emotions and to click with people. You know, I'm not some recluse sitting in the corner drawing cartoons.
I can completely relate to your path of becoming an empath that started within your household with your parents. Mm-hmm. I can definitely relate to that. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're speaking with Pulitzer Prize winning editorial cartoonist Jack Oman, who was with the Sacramento Bee. Jack, we're talking to you under circumstances where you're no longer with the Sacramento Bee. Earlier this month, you and other three award-winning cartoonists were let go by McClatchy, and that's the parent company of the Sacramento Bee, after a decade of really remarkable work. What can you share with us regarding the departure of you and your colleagues, or what would you like to share?
I will only share my emotions. I feel betrayed. I feel slapped in the face. I felt like I had been T-boned at an intersection. That's all I have to say. Other than I love my colleagues at the Sacramento Bee. They're wonderful people. They're trying to do their job under very difficult circumstances.
Given that you were with the Sacramento Bee for almost 10 years, or roughly a decade, from 2013 until just July of this year, in what ways has editorial cartooning changed or evolved over that time?
Over 10 years? It's interesting. When I went to that newspaper, their circulation was 199,000. I can tell you it's way less than that, right? It's a public record. It's a fact. Everybody's like that all across the country. The fact is that cartoons are still relevant and important, and they're an important feature of any daily newspaper. And so I don't really want to get into specifics about anything regarding my former employer. Mm. But I will say that I still think cartoons are interesting to people.
Yeah, and people find them interesting. I mean, you said yourself that even though the landscape is changing to more digital and social media, I mean, people are still going to take in your work, and not only your work, but the work of other editorial cartoonists.
Well, I remain in syndication with Tribune Content Agency and 200 newspapers, and I can assure you that you'll be hearing where I'm going and what I'm doing very, very soon.
Yeah, I would imagine that you are in high demand. You know, you've won so many awards over the years, but I would think one of the biggest ones was the Pulitzer Prize in 2016. What did that mean to you?
When you win the Pulitzer, you become the Pulitzer brand. And even my golf partners are like, that wasn't a Pulitzer Prize winning putt, you know, or that was a lousy Pulitzer winning drive. This is our Uncle Billy who we play with. And there is this element of, I remember so clearly right after I won and we were golfing, and I play at Land Park a lot and for $19 a round. And this guy came up to me and said, Mr. Oman. And they said, yes. And he said, I just wanted to congratulate you on your Nobel Prize. And I said, thanks. It was for physics. And, you know, but it's Nobel is Pulitzer, is MacArthur, whatever. But you are a captive of that brand. The other one that was really interesting to me was the Robert F. Kennedy Journalism Award, where I got a phone call from Ethel Kennedy.
Wow.
And I said, Mrs. Kennedy, I want to tell you how important your husband was to me. And she said, you honor Bobby's memory with your work. And I said, I wanted to tell you that I went to the burial at Arlington. And that was like the most moving moment of my career. And she said, oh, that means so much to me. And people like you are carrying on Bobby's work by just remembering him and thinking about him when you do your stuff. Those are the two biggest moments for me in winning these awards. And I mean, awards are cool. And sometimes you actually get money from the awards. And but to me, that I got incredibly emotional thinking
yeah.
about.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like a full circle moment, because you were at the forefront at your time as a youth of taking in these really historical moments in U.S. history. And then in the past decade, we have had our share of history-making moments as well. When you kind of bookend both of them, how has politics and media coverage changed during these historic moments from, you know, 50 years ago, 40 years ago to now?
Well, I came of age during Watergate, and really, that was very comparable right down to the Trump era. Roger Stone was operating back then, and Roger Stone is operating now, and that's 50 years ago. And so we can all look back and think about Camelot and think about the new frontier and the Great Society and all the things and civil rights movement and all that. Yeah, we've moved the ball in a lot of ways. But there hasn't been a lot of change in some ways. We reverted badly under Trump and this culture. And he just kind of exposed what a lot of Americans are. He didn't invent it. He just publicized it. I will say that just, one of my favorite movies is The Candidate. And it came out in 1972. And it's about a U.S. Senate candidate played by Robert Redford. You know, they didn't have digital. They didn't have anything. They had just TV and filmed spots and, you know, interviews with newspapers. And now, like, that's almost gone almost. It's completely atomized. It's just different on every level, to the point where politicians, in some ways, you know, they'd almost don't work individual institutions mm-hmm. because they're just tweeting their own things out and, you know, doing their things on Instagram and so on. And it's very difficult to get a coherent message out. I mean, there's a U.S. Senate race going on right now in California with three of the probably most effective members of Congress. Nobody's talking about it yet. I mean, you don't hear anybody talking about this Senate race. Mm-hmm. I find that really curious. And so back in the day, you know, it was all elephants and donkeys and waving flags and may the best person win and so on. And now it's like, I'm going to destroy you. You're a pedophile. You're, you know, whatever it is. It's like the debate has gotten ratcheted up to the point where a normal person, which most people are, frankly, are sick of it. And rightly so.
And given how things are evolving, that still gives you and other editorial cartoonists a lot of material to work with thoughtfully. You know, I know that you're working on your future plans. I imagine and hope that we will continue to see more of your cartoons again soon. But a little bit of a curveball, you're also an author and you have written many books on fishing.
Yes.
Can we expect another one at some point? I think one was called Inconvenient Trout.
Yes.
I love that.
Angler Management. They're fly fishing books, the four. I am working on this. I can talk about. I was recruited by Writer's House Literary Agency to create a graphic memoir on the moon landing And so I'm very interested in that. And so I'm way down the road on that proposal. And I've been working on that for 9 months. So I will be focusing some time on that and going forward. But I can assure you that I have lots of things going on that I can't talk about right now. But I'm happy to come on in a couple of weeks when I can, if you want.
I love that. Jack, I'm happy that you're busy. It is very, very well deserved. Thank you for taking the time.
You're a delight. Thank you.
That was my conversation with Pulitzer Prize-winning editorial cartoonist Jack Gohman, discussing his incredible career and an end of an era at the Sacramento Bee. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.